Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to a classic program from the archives of New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. All of our calls for this classic program have already been taken, but if you're hurting and New Life can help, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Now here's Steve.
Hello there, and welcome to New Life Live, whether you're listening on the radio or perhaps you are watching on television. We're here. Dr. Jill Hubbard joining me. Hey, Dr. Jill, how are you?
Hello, Steve. I'm good.
And Dr. Dave Stoop is coming in shortly, and he's just right outside the door there being distracted by people that are well-meaning, but they're keeping him from here.
Yes.
But anyway, we're glad you're here with us today, and hope and pray that if you need help, you're going to call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That is the phone number to call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. While we're waiting for Dave to get adjusted, you know, a lot of you, you hear us talk about EMDR, and that's not an emergency room doctor or something like that. It really is.
It's not EMB either.
No, it's a technique that helps people who have been traumatized in many, many different ways. There are a lot of different theories as to why it works, but it does seem to really work and provide healing for the people that have been traumatized and then finally find some hope, even though it sounds kind of strange that your eye moves quickly and it heals trauma.
Well, the simple explanation is, you know, one side of your brain is emotional, one side is logical. Mm-hmm. And we tend to store the trauma only on one side. We haven't integrated it into our whole being.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the eye movement was Francine Shapiro kind of discovered it on her own by accident and then worked it with Vietnam vets and was highly effective. It kind of integrates the trauma so that it's not as trauma.
Bilateral stimulation,
yeah.
Right?
And there's no, it's not hypnosis. Mm-mm. Or and there's nothing anti-Christian or biblical about
something
it.
Something weird.
They do it by tapping, tapping alternate knees. Mm-hmm. and that stimulates the same way.
Because the brain is weird. It's mm-hmm. the most malfunctioning organ of your body. Every day, my kidneys work fine.
Yeah.
But my brain, it really is in bad shape. We're going to the phones early here, and I'm going to go to Bea, and she's from Boise, Idaho. Hi, Bea. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for taking my call. My question is kind of difficult for me to explain, but I'll try and be brief.
Okay.
It's about my husband and I. We have this ongoing issue.
Uh-huh.
About his grown children from previous marriages.
Okay.
And
you're treating them just too kindly and generously, and he resents it. Is that right?
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly.
I know the problem is with me.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And, you know, there's something wrong with me because he's an amazing man.
Okay.
And he loves kids. And, you know, I have three children from the previous marriage, and we have a child together.
Yeah.
So
what's the problem? What is the problem?
The issue that we have is he has a grown child that he considers his child, but is not his child biologically
mm-hmm.
or legally.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't raise this this young man,
mm-hmm.
but he considers him his son.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of annoys me that he elevates this young man to the same status as our child, our actual child.
Well, where is that child's dad?
I don't know.
Oh.
He had a bad upbringing.
Yeah.
He had a hard life.
So your husband is stepping in and being a father to a fatherless child. And it's tough for you, even even.
It is.
Or there's more to the story that maybe
is there
you're
more
not
to the
aware
story?
Of, yeah, that you don't
well,
even know.
Yeah,
about.
There is.
It, okay,
he's an odd person to get along with.
All right. Well, we'll delve into this when we get back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here. Dr. Jill Hubbard, she's the author of Forgiving Our Fathers and Mother. Dave Stoop, he wrote Forgiving Our
Parents
Forgiving Ourselves. And also,
Forgiving the Unforgivable.
Yeah. Which it would have been unforgivable if we hadn't finished our manuscripts on time.
Right.
We did. We've got a new project, two new books coming out this year, The 12 Laws of Life Recovery and The 12 Gifts of Life Recovery. And if you've never thought about starting a life recovery group, call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll tell you how to do it. Because it, you know, rather than wait for somebody else to do it, you do it. It's easy to do. And there are videos that you can download that will show you how to start start the session out. And you just really, it's kind of a push and play or plug and play.
Plug and play.
And then you push to get people to talk after you plug and play. Maybe that's it. All right. So Bee's telling us about her husband, who is the father figure to an, I think, odd young man who is hard to get along with.
Yeah, you know, the times that he's been around, he's said a strange, he's done strange and inappropriate things.
Like what's something inappropriate he's done?
Well, he makes immature comments for his age. Something
like what?
That, you know, I we happen to have a Ford Focus vehicle, and he just. He, you know, said to my teenage boys, well, that's a funny-sounding name, Ford Focus.
Uh-huh, okay.
And so
I would have said it's not nearly as funny-sounding as a Ford Probe. Remember when they had that?
Oh, yeah.
That's a horrible name for anything. But anyway, all right, so look, I think that this is not something that is going to be easily resolved with a 1-2-3 because there's some pull that this child has on your husband that is different, you know, even than a lot of non-biological relationships between a boy and a guy that says, hey, I think I could be a father figure.
How did your husband meet this young man?
And how old is he?
Well, he's in his 20s.
Okay.
He's grown. When my husband and I met, his children were all grown. And I understand that there's this...
And how did they meet?
About,
how did they meet?
Well, they met... my husband was married to his mother, his first marriage.
So there is a
connection there.
So she was pregnant with this young man.
Okay.
And... So my husband is not his biological father.
Okay, well, then it's not
makes
quite
more
as...
sense.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Well, she never raised him, though.
No.
She left him for another man.
So what... Mm-hmm. So your big problem with this, other than that it's an odd child, it's not his biological child, why do you resent your husband investing in a young man that essentially was... a stepchild, or kind of a quasi-stepchild.
Well, I was a stepchild.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have a problem with him having a relationship with him.
Uh-huh.
You know, even if, you know, this young man looks to him as a father figure, I don't have a problem with that. It just annoys me that he elevates him to the same status as our actual child. His only biological child is the child that we have together. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. So let's just hear what Dave and Jill have to say about that. And
Well, probably the more you struggle with this, the more it becomes a problem. And I don't know that he's around that often, but
he's not really.
What I would have a conversation with my husband and just say some of the things that bother me. And then I would let it be. I wouldn't bring it up again because
I have. Okay. We've gone round and round on this issue.
No, don't go round and round on it because it's not going to go any place except to become a problem between you. And the other thing, the other thought that I have is that it represents something that bothers you that's not on the surface. There's something underneath this that offends you, that somehow he's not investing enough in your own biological son, or he's somehow not doing what he needs to be doing with your own.
Well, and yeah, and I was wondering, do the other kids feel slighted and resentful? Because sometimes you have someone that really is very charitable, but then their own family feels slighted.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. You know,
and I
understand his heart because I'm very grateful that he loves my children from my previous marriage as if they were his own. I mean, he really does not treat them any differently.
Then why would this other boy be the same as your kids?
Yeah.
And that they're stepkids and he's treating them alike.
Yes, just answer that. But what is the difference?
I know the problem is me.
Yeah, what is the difference?
But what is the difference?
What's at risk for you? What's threatened?
I guess it's just the fact that our child is his actual biological child, and it's just, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
You know,
so let me just.
That's not special.
Okay.
That's not special.
Right. Now, hold on a second. We talk about this at our workshop all the time. B, you are aware that you have a problem, right?
Yeah.
I don't hear any desire to change it. So, you know, awareness without desire to change is kind of worthless. I see. There's the problem. And then you have to go from awareness to wanting to change it to being willing to change it. Now, there's an old prayer that says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, not bring up this thing ever again as if I could change it, and then the wisdom to stop doing this over and over again. Actually, I just kind of made up this. But here's the thing. Your journey is not a journey to convince. It's a journey to accept, because the more you try to convince, the more you're driving him toward the very thing. I don't know. There's something between you and your husband that the more you bring it up, the more he will not relinquish or will not do anything. But my take on this is, you're saying that they don't spend a lot of time together. This is really a petty issue in the great scheme of life.
Well, and one of the things that, you know, you said your husband is a wonderful man. One of the things that makes him so wonderful is that when he was marrying previously, he married someone who was already pregnant with a child, and he embraced that child. That was part of the deal.
Right.
And so that makes him a wonderful guy. And that's the part I think you need to look at and accept.
Well, and I think there's another part that you might want to look at in that. Your expectation of how your husband is going to treat your biological child, the one that you share, there's something that's missing there.
Right. Even though you say there isn't, there's got to be.
You need to focus and say what would it be different if this was not an issue?
Yeah.
And see. If this kid were out of the picture, how would it be
different? That may help you in your willingness to change.
Right. I mean, you know, what do you want? I mean, don't you really want to be connected to your husband? I mean, isn't that really, you go through these years, are you going to let this continue to be the point of separation? Or is this an excuse not to be, to not be totally connected to your spouse?
That's a good point, and that it may be just a way to hold back a little bit. This guy's so perfect that it's too good to be true.
Yes, and you might feel inferior, so you find one area, and then that distances you. People look at excuses all the time. They say, I really want to be close, but they can't be close.
It becomes a way to be emotionally safe, and yet it's not safe.
Right. So anyway, I am praying for you that you can find this level of acceptance. Now, I'm going to send you the Spiritual Renewal Bible. There's a whole chain of study and devotions. This Bible, Dave and I edited it. You can get it through New Life. It was Bible of the Year. It's going to help you come to a place of acceptance right here. Let's go to Grace from Salina, Kansas, listening online. Hello, Grace. How are you?
I'm good.
Great. How could we help today?
I have called you guys before. I've been through a really rough marriage and divorce and some physical and emotional abuse. You guys helped me go to a Women in the Battle conference, and I've done Healing is a Choice, and I also have done your New Life Recovery Bible Devotions, the STEP program, and I'm just finishing that up. But my ordinary counselor that I go to routinely, she also has an EMDR therapist in her office, and I was kind of considering that EMDR therapy, but I just, how do you know that that therapy is effective and that the therapist is familiar with it?
Well, they have to have had training in it, Grace. I've had the basic training. Dr. Keffer has had the basic and the advanced training. And once you've done the basic training, you know enough to deal with general issues. And once you do the advanced, you know how to deal with specific, more difficult issues. So I would say, you know, what training have you had in it? I would ask that question. There's nothing to fear in EMDR because there's no input coming from the counselor. The counselor is facilitating the process. So it's, you know, some people think, well, you're going to plant something in my mind, or, you know.
No, worst case scenario, it doesn't work for you.
Yeah, the worst case. But it tends, the research says that it works. Mm-hmm. And it was developed with dealing with the traumas of Vietnam vets. And then it's been expanded now to all kinds of trauma. And the only reason it wouldn't work is if you don't stay with it long enough, or your person who's doing it isn't trained enough to do it right, is trying to pick it up on their own. You can't pick it up on your own. You got to go through the training.
But it's like everything that we suggest people do. If it doesn't produce results, then it didn't work, and you should either go to someone that's better trained or more uniquely trained for you, or you should try something else.
Yeah.
I would say this too. A person that goes and has EMDR, who has experienced major trauma, and walks out of that office and sits around a table with six people who have not ever been treated for their trauma, who are still living their trauma, who are dragging everybody around them back into this horrible place in their life, and they're depressed and all of the things. The EMDR, it needs a fertile ground in which to produce the results. And so if you're just surrounding yourself with sickness and sorrow and tragedy, you don't have as opportunity.
Well, you're re-traumatizing yourself.
Yeah,
right,
you
and you need to return to your therapist and continue processing what's come up.
Right.
So it's not just a magical cure.
Yeah.
Right? It's an adjunct to treatment.
I've had it done to me as part of the training, and it's really effective. It really is, and it's...
Did you mention the trauma of working with me or anything like that?
No.
About us writing books together? Was that what?
No, that was prior to writing.
Well, Grace, let us try to help you find a counselor or options in your area there. And you just call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and let's see if we can find that person for you. All right. I'm glad that you called, and really hope that you find some help there, and if your therapist isn't able to provide because she wasn't trained enough or whatever, I hope that you'll find the hope and the help and the healing. You know, I think that's the big mystery, is why does God choose to just heal some people and not others? You know, I think for most of us, our first form of treatment is God, take it away. That's our first preference. We'd like to be treated that way. Then the second one is, okay, God, if you're not going to take it away, then give me some quick fix, instant solution thing, like a procedure that I could do. And, you know, those two things, a lot of times, they're for sissies sometimes.
I got a biblical example of why God doesn't do the first or the second one.
All right.
When we come back from the break, I'll be happy to share.
Right. Okay. As I was saying, sometimes it's for sissies, and Dave's going to tell us why. All right. You're listening to New Life Live. We're glad that you are. 1-800-NEW-LIFE for some help, or go to our website, newlife.com.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Steve Arterburn here with two people that have helped a lot of people, including each other. Now, Dave, you were going to give us a biblical example.
Well,
yes, we want to hear it.
Yeah. That forever we would never question why God doesn't heal.
Well, there's an example of God healing Saul, King Saul. When Saul was chosen king, he was a very fearful man.
Mm-hmm.
He was hiding in the baggage when he knew he was going to be picked. He didn't want anything to do with it.
Right.
Then he goes home and nothing changes. He's out plowing the fields. And then something happens to one of the cities in Israel, and they're asking for help. And Saul comes out, and it says that the spirit of 1 Samuel 11:6 says the spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he burned with anger.
Hmm.
Probably the first time in his life he was angry.
Hmm.
That gave him the energy to and the motivation to get out there and get the people together. They went and defeated the enemy, and he was now hailed as the king. See. Well, it's not too long afterwards, though, that he falls back into the old patterns.
Right.
Chapter 15, it says that the people complained, and I was afraid, and his fear came back. See, so God healed his personality instantly, the woundedness in him. He had a very domineering father who was a general in the army, and he never learned anything. He never developed the character that went with the healing.
Mm-hmm.
So when God heals us instantly, it's like he bypasses the learning process.
Or we choose to bypass the learning.
We're trying to bypass the learning process.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so James 1:2 says, you know, count it all joy when problems and trials come, because you're going to learn something. You're going to grow. You're going to develop character. You're going to develop your faith. And so he doesn't do the instant healing thing, because then he deprives us of the learning experience,
right,
and the development, mm-hmm, of character and the development of hope. And it's just the way God operates. He's more interested in our growth and development of our character and our faith than he is in relieving some pain,
mm-hmm,
that we may be experiencing. And that's, he still would like to relieve the pain, but he's going to do it over a process typically.
So that's the bad news and the good news.
Yeah,
there is a plan.
There's a plan.
But it's got pain.
And the pain is designed to teach us something that is going to enhance our development of who we are in our relationship with God. And that's what God cares about.
So most of us can't handle instant healing.
I don't think so.
I think that's true.
We would miss the process. And we would miss the learning and the development of character. And
we wouldn't choose it often without that pain to motivate.
There have been those who have been instantly healed, and they have taken that gift. Let's just say they've been instantly healed of the craving for alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they take that gift. Now they're not obsessing over the craving or whatever. And they go and they develop character. And it's easier for them. But there are others who take that gift and think that they've got it all together.
They don't have to do
anything
now.
And then you see
and then
relapse.
They obsess over other things.
Yeah.
And then they never grow. They never develop character, and they miss out on, you know. And I don't know why God does that sometimes and why he doesn't. I just know that he typically doesn't do it because he wants us to learn some important things in the process of healing.
Yeah. All right. Let's take another call. Shawnee from Chicago, Illinois, WYLL is the station. Hi there.
Hi. How are you guys today?
Doing pretty well. How about you?
Not so well. I'll ask my question first.
Okay.
But before I ask my question, I just wanted to say I really appreciate all that you guys do. It's been a blessing to me over the years, and I'm really thankful I was able to get through today.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Thanks. My question is, I'll ask it and then I'll give you a little bit of context. What strategies, and I know you just got done talking about not trying to use quick strategies, but mm-hmm. what practical steps can I take to deal with pain and anger, given that my husband just recently abandoned me? He just walked away, and he has no way of being in contact, and I'm sorry, I'm very nervous and emotional.
Okay.
You can't contact him? You don't know where he is. Wow.
Yeah, he left his cell phone and wallet. And also, I'm about 5 months pregnant with our first child.
Oh, my word.
So,
Yeah. Oh. Now, how long have you been married?
In March, it will be 4 years if we get to see March. So, but I've known him for almost 11 years about.
Yeah.
And just to give you a little bit of context, and then I'll let you guys ask any questions or just give advice. He is diagnosed with bipolar, and he's highly functioning, and he's unmedicated. He's been unmedicated for years because he doesn't acknowledge that he has a problem, so he's always refused that.
Mm-hmm.
So some of this is not really a surprise. And then also what goes on with me is, you know, I'm very used to trauma, having grown up with that, so I think this is why I find myself in this situation. So I've dealt with it, but I actually, when the day that he left, we had an altercation, I had pushed him repeatedly, and so I have a pattern of getting very angry and then putting my hands on him in that manner. So when it gets to that point, so my anger doesn't help his situation at all. So he left, and
when you say
where
you
we find ourselves.
When you say you put your hands on him, are you saying you start to hit him?
I start to push him. Yeah, I've never slapped or punched him or anything like that, but I have done my share of pushing him.
Uh-huh. Is he smaller than you? Is he smaller than you?
No, we're about the same height.
That's
actually
it.
We're both pretty short people, but we're about the same height. So.
All right.
Well, but he's probably in a manic phase and has just gone off the deep end.
Yeah, we'll help you as soon as we come back from this break.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of 7 books, including Growth Has No Boundaries by Drs. John Townsend and Henry Cloud, Take Your Life Back by Steve Arterburn and Dr. Dave Stoop, and the Emotional Freedom Workbook. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today. To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. So, Dave, you were saying you think that, you know, he's in the manic phase of his bipolar disorder, and what should she do?
Well, you kind of wait, I guess.
Well, and has he done this before? Has he walked out like this?
Yes, he has.
Okay.
A few years ago, he actually walked out, and it had nothing to do with an altercation that he and I have had. And actually, basically a few years ago, he walked out, and he literally was gone for about 2 days. And then the police had actually found him. He was in a park somewhere. So he had returned home, and the police helped him to get back home. He walked quite a ways from where we live. But since then, you know, he walked out anytime we have an argument. That's what he does, and he usually returns. So this isn't an unknown pattern, but this has been a very long time. It's been since Sunday, so now it's about 3 days.
Okay, well, I would call the police and put out a missing persons report.
I think that's a...
So we've done, yeah, thank you. We've done that, and
okay.
I've contacted my church, and they're very involved, and I'm really been blessed to be around a good community of people who know the situation and have been support with me. I guess my question really to you guys is more, what should I do emotionally? Because I know that regardless if he comes back or not, I can't continue on with this type of roller coaster or even my anger, you know. It's very detrimental, especially before, you know, this child comes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so, so the big thing is, what is the most effective way to help him get on medication and stay on medication? See, well, to me, that's the big...
That's a huge hurdle because they...
It is.
That's one of the things that goes with bipolar is that they're very non-compliant when it comes to medication. I'll tell you one thing you should be doing, Shawnee, and that is to stop blaming yourself. Your confrontation was simply a confrontation, and if that hadn't triggered it, something else would have triggered it, because he's on that end of the spectrum right now where he's feeling all powerful, omnipotent, doesn't need anybody, doesn't need anything, and when he crashes, then that's when you'll find him, probably.
Right.
Just like the last time.
And so, part of the dealing with her pain then would be what?
I think she needs to also, Shawnee, you need to also look at, you get to the point where you push him, and there's got to be a way for you to walk away sooner. So I think it's important for you to look at your part and what he triggers in you, because he has his own set of problems, but it triggers something in you that needs to be looked at.
And the way to do that, I would call the behavioral health programs at your hospitals nearby, the mental hospitals, and ask them if they have a support group for those who are married to bipolar people.
That's a great.
There are lots. Lots of those groups.
Lots of those groups are around, and you're with other people who are dealing with the same thing, and it gives you perspective. And what Jill is suggesting is right on, but you need the perspective of other people who understand what you're dealing with to really find that out. And That's where I would go with it. But you got to, you know, just take my word for it. You got to stop blaming yourself for this because if it hadn't been this, it had been something else, because that's just the mood that he was in. And he probably triggered that in you because he knew he would, and that gave him an excuse to leave.
Is there any advice on helping with compliance? Actually, it's not complying. He doesn't even take it at all. But
well,
is
I've
there,
had parents grind it up and put it in their orange juice.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, really?
But no, because there has to be monitoring of blood levels and that. And
but I think when they hit the depressive phase,
that's when you
and know. They're desperate and they need help, that's when you have to jump in and intervene and have a consistent plan.
And then you put something in place that is you monitoring during the depressive.
Right, or you have doctors monitoring.
And that helps you to intervene the second that the person doesn't want to take the medication.
Right, and when they're depressed, you know, kind of educating them. And, of course, they're going to grieve the loss of the mania because that's the time when they feel powerful.
Yeah.
Right? So...
And it's you know a tough one to do because they're not that educable.
They're highly resistive to
but they also need to be in counseling to deal with the consequences. Counseling doesn't deal with the bipolar itself. So to go to counseling to deal with the, because that's physiological.
Right. They have to have
saying,
some
you need
medical
counseling
interventions
to overcome your diabetes. You know, but. Diabetics need counseling to cope with what is
going on.
To
be educated, to understand.
And bipolar need the same kind of thing to understand.
Well, and they have to see the impact on other people because they don't often see that.
Which is one of the signs of mature character is I actually am aware of the impact of my behavior on other people. And that's pretty tough for a guy like him. But you do the best that you can, and I hope and pray that there will be a response so that you don't have to walk away. So, because now, you know, there's a baby coming that needs a daddy, and you want it to be as healthy a daddy as possible, but
And that may be a way to get him to face the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in addition to being another one of the reasons he might have walked away is...
See, bipolar used to be just called manic depression.
Right.
And the backwards of mental health hospitals were filled with people like that. And so it had a stigma attached to it as being mental illness.
Yeah.
And when they found that lithium changed everything, and Depakote, Neurontin, and some mm-hmm. others do the same thing, and it was treatable physiologically, mm-hmm. that it was a physiological abnormality, just like diabetes is a physiological abnormality. But it still has a stigma attached to it, and so that's why a lot of times they resist.
Because unmedicated, I mean, you can become psychotic.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally break with reality.
And I've worked with people who commit a crime. So they get arrested and get put in the hospital at the prison so they can get treatment.
Right.
They're so desperate. Yeah.
Okay. I hope that is helpful. Let me send you Healing is a Choice. Man, that is rough. Pregnant and he's gone. Wow. Let's go to Maria from Woodstock, Georgia. WNIV is the station. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. How could we help you today?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My English is not that well, but I'm calling you because I've been hearing you for a long time, and you are a very, very great help for me.
Thank you.
My life and my children, listening to the different cases.
Thank you.
And I need a lot of help right now. I have a child who is 24 years old. I have three boys. 24, 22, and 21. And I've been there always for them. This one have a DUI last December.
Driving under the influence, okay, in December, all right.
Yeah. And then he get a lawyer, he's working, he finished college.
Okay.
He's trying to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I keep telling him, because I know he was driving on the influence,
mm-hmm.
not really drunk, but one or two beers.
Right.
And I keep telling him not to do it.
If you're
going to drink, don't drive, whatever.
Yeah.
He says, don't worry, ma'am. Finally, he got it. Okay. Then he went to court today with a lawyer. His lawyer advised him what he needs to do to present himself like the best he can. But I think he got a tough judge.
Mm-hmm.
And then he already do some community service. He already went to do DUI classes. Advising for...
Okay. Can you ask us a question? We're about to go to a break, and can you ask the question about it?
My question is how I can guide him, because today he seems like that frustrated and mad, upset. How can I guide him according to God?
Hmm. Okay.
Give it to him a spiritual advice so he can understand why
mm-hmm.
the consequences, and he can grow.
Now, has he been in jail for it, or is he going to have to go to jail for it?
He has to go one night and one
night.
Day.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, we will help you with that. And I'm really glad that you called, and I'm sorry that you're going through this, especially when you saw it coming. Oh, my goodness, it's so difficult when we see these things and no one will heed the warning. Kind of like God. I mean, that's the way we are, his kids. We'll take a break. We'll come back for the final segment right after this. 1-800-NEW-LIFE or newlife.com. If you need some help, we want to help you. We'll be back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. One of the things I want to say is that the best thing that could happen to somebody who has been driving under the influence is to finally be sentenced to something.
Yeah.
Yes.
To have to undergo a consequence, because the bigger issue is that you have to drink a lot of times under the influence to get caught by a policeman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most people,
the first time they don't get caught.
In a million years, they never get caught. They do it all their life. But so you really have to be a frequent.
Has to happen a lot for you to get caught.
And
you get caught once, you got a problem. You get twice, boy, you're an alcoholic.
So so this is a good thing that he was cited and is going to have to spend the night in jail. And you're going to say to him, not, oh, it'll be okay. No, you want to say to him, oh, my goodness, compared to the sentence, a life sentence, of someone steps out in front of you and you happen to be under the influence, and now you're dealing with manslaughter or who knows where the thing can spin out of control, you're going to go spend one night in jail. Don't ever, ever do anything that's going to set you up for this again.
Well, I think this is, you know, and a lot of times the first offense, they kind of shine on the meetings and the training and all that stuff. I think, Maria, one of the things I would do is to start going to a speaker meeting, find out from AA where a speaker meeting is, and go with him. Say, we're going to go get educated about this stuff so that and I'm going to get educated, because if you get educated, that reduces his ability to fool you.
Yeah.
Right, right. So you can take this time and minimize it. Or you can learn from it and see it as God is giving you another chance.
Right.
Yeah.
And that way, you're really being helpful, even though you think to be helpful is just to comfort. We're going to send you a Life Recovery Bible to give to him. He can read it in his one night in jail that we're hoping is going to turn this thing around. All right. Mm-hmm. I've got time for one final phone call. Allison from Spokane, Washington, listens to the podcast. Hello, Allison. How are you?
Hi. I've been better.
Okay. I don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to get to your call.
Okay. Well, just really having a hard time in my marriage right now. I don't know how to trust my husband. I mean, I don't know what to trust him with because he's still acting out in a porn addiction.
Well, you wouldn't want to trust him at all, then.
Well, that's what I feel like.
That's a valid feeling.
It's really confusing because, you know, people in church or our families, you know, just kind of want us to try to keep going and working things out.
Okay.
But I don't know how, like, what behaviors should I expect from him?
Well, you should expect,
how do I know?
Okay, you should expect him, you should expect him to go get help.
Yeah.
And when someone tells you they want you to work this out, you should say to them, he has to get help for us to work this out. So just as you're encouraging me to not give up, I hope you'll encourage him to get help.
Right.
That's
right.
There's no, okay, I won't do this anymore.
Okay, we'll just play nice.
Yeah.
He needs to get, feels better.
He needs to get help. Because look at all these people that are standing around watching this. And in the midst of that, he still doesn't decide that he's going to go get help so that he doesn't humiliate himself anymore in front of all these people.
You can't stop. You can't just stop and stay stopped, because, you know, he can stop for a couple of months and then it's right back at it. That's every man's history. So he's got to get help. And every man's battle weekend is the best place to start.
Okay, he is signed up for that. I guess
good.
I'm just like,
good.
What do I do in the meantime? I feel like I just can't trust him, and I should just go to my parents.
Just wait. Wait just a second. Don't do anything.
Okay.
Don't do anything other than be glad or supportive that he's going to get help. In fact, I'd be saying to him, I am so proud of you for getting help. Now, that really doesn't seem fair at all. You're proud of him but the goal is to get him to the place where more people have been helped than anybody else, anywhere else.
Yeah.
So then once he goes, then you're not going to trust him the day after he comes back or the month later. But maybe you could get involved in a codependency group. You could go to our Women in the Battle workshop. Some things
yeah,
like that
I'm
that would
up as well.
Okay,
oh,
all
perfect.
Right.
Well, you're going to find out what to do.
You know what to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for right now,
so you just have to hold tight.
Yeah. You just tell all those folks that are supportive and wanting it to all work out to help you. Just you know, be patient and let him go through it, and then you go. And I think you're going to find a totally different frame of mind when you both of you do that, and you'll be hopeful rather than frustrated or angry or anything like that. But I think you're so wise in wondering about this, because a lot of people have assumed, well, once he gets help, then I can trust him. Or once he gets help, I need to instantly feel forgiveness for him. And none of that really
valid. It takes time and consistency on his part and openness on his part. And maybe 2 years from now, you'll be trusting him a little bit more or a lot more.
So
but
right now, you don't try to trust him.
No, that's not the
right
issue.
You just tell him that you're going to wait and see what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? And you don't police him either.
Yeah. I'll send you a book for spouses out of our Every Man's Battle series and Every Woman's Battle, and I think that'll be an encouragement to you. But just, I tell you, there are thousands of women probably listening or watching saying, oh my goodness, what a gift that there's a man that's willing to go.
Yeah.
Because so many they say, well, I'll read a book or whatever. They don't get it. But he's going to go get help. And then once he's there, see, it's our job and the job of his counselor to really help him face the reality of what's there. So you've got a lot of people on your side who have dealt with literally 11,000 guys like him.
Mm-hmm. And when somebody asks you a question or says something, say, well, I really need you to pray for him that this will be really a life-changing experience, and get people to pray and pray for you that you'll know your part in terms of the direction you're going.
Right, and I do think, Steve, in the meantime, what you said about her going to groups could be a way to help the time go better for her as she's waiting.
Okay, God bless you. I'm really glad that he's going, and you know what? You might be listening, and you're thinking, wow, maybe I should be the one going. Yes, you should. If you're thinking that, come and go. I mean, it doesn't mean you're a sex addict. It just means that in this area of sexual integrity, there's inconsistency. You need to get some help.
Or you may be thinking, wow, I wish my husband would do that.
Right.
Well, then challenge him and make a reservation. And
that's right.
Don't give him a choice.
So many men are healthy today because of a bold move on the part of a wife. So we want you to be one of those people. Well, we're just about out of time. Don't forget, the workshops are coming up. Every Man's Battle is the 6th. That's next week, I think. So please sign up, get help, or ask someone you love to sign up and get help. And then Restore is February 27th, and Emotional Freedom, that's March the 27th. We love you. Help us if you can. Support this ministry, 1-800-NEW-LIFE, newlife.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again on Monday for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.